Art McDonald from Salem is joining us on the line here today on MSONewsSports.com. Art, welcome. Thanks for taking some time to join us and to talk about the we'll talk about what we're going to talk about in just a moment, but first, welcome.
Thanks, Bill. Nice to be with you.
Well, first up, Art is a minister emeritus at the First Universalist Church in Essex, longtime minister there, but now emeritus. And Art, I guess let's get right to it. The protests that happened in Salem, but there were simultaneous protests across the state on Thursday regarding seeking peace in the Ukrainian war. And Art, there aren't a lot of people proclaiming or asking for peace with that Ukraine war, which is kind of interesting, having grown up myself in the 70s when there was a peace movement. But tell us about this movement and what happened on Thursday.
Yeah, Bill, I'm really glad you're asking. So you're right about that. We've been, those of us in the peace community have been troubled by the fact that we hear only escalation and very occasionally any talk about peace, particularly from our own government. I know there have been attempts by, for example, this Turkish president Erdogan's been to Moscow trying to get them to consider ceasefire, and I think the French President Macron has attempted. But I'm not sure how much effort has been put in by our own diplomatic corps, so it's a little bit troubling. And, you know, in the peace movement now, Bill, it's a challenging time because when this war broke out, and I'm also, by the way, a member of the Veterans for Peace, and when this war broke out and we started talking about it both with the veterans but also in the wider peace movement, we found that we had some differences about the West's strategy in reaction to the invasion and the United States strategy. So, for example, in fact, I gave a sermon about this several months ago. I actually, having thought it through carefully, approved or agreed with the idea of sending weapons because I saw Ukraine in this very defensive position. And in the religious world, we have a theory that has fallen on hard times recently, but it's called the just war theory. And I think according to the traditional just war theory, they have a right to defend themselves. This was a really naked invasion. And I think without getting help from outside forces, they would probably be slaughtered and would have to surrender, and Russia would occupy Ukraine. So months ago, I supported sending weapons, and I actually still do. However, at the same time now, I'm thinking maybe it's not exactly a stalemate, but clearly the Ukrainians has surprised the world with their ability to defend their land, and it's a bit of a stalemate. And I think a time now for negotiation, for a ceasefire, and an attempt to sit down at the table with the UN, with the key actors, along with Russia and Ukraine, and try to negotiate an end to the bloodshed, because otherwise, our viewpoint... One thing the peace movement is totally in agreement with is that this stalemate, this war has no end in sight, and there will just be so many more people dead, and who knows what it'll accomplish. So we think it's a ripe time for ceasefire, for negotiations. Probably no one will be happy about, you know, there's going to have to be some compromise, and it will not be easy. But otherwise, we see just endless bloodshed. So that's our point, you know. That group that was down at Salem, and, you know, some of those people support sending arms, some don't. But all of us supported the idea of a ceasefire and negotiation.
Yeah, I can certainly understand, Art, and I can see why people, you know, would get behind the just war justification, if you will. But like you said, at this point, where are our senators calling for peace talks? Where is our president calling for peace talks? He's sending tanks. Again, maybe that will be the right decision to make at some point, but don't we have the... Don't our leaders need to do the bully pulpit thing to call for peace?
I would think so. I mean, I don't want the United States to be the key actor. Some people are calling for direct talks between the United States and Russia. And I have an uneasy feeling about that because I think, wait a second, Ukraine needs a voice in this. Guterres from the United Nations needs a voice in this, and some of the other European actors. So I think we know, you and I both know, the United States is key to NATO and is a major power militarily, but I don't want it to just be Russia and the United States. But clearly we have a role, a huge role to play, and I'd like to think that there's some, you know, negotiations going around that we don't know about, you know, that there are conversations happening. I'd like to think that we don't know that publicly, but it does seem to me that continuing to escalate is going to destroy Russia and it's going to destroy Ukraine, and there'll be decades and decades rebuilding. So we just feel that, you know, it's time. It's really time to be clear. And I will tell you, by the way, I don't know how the other Congress people responded to the rallies in Worcester and Boston and so forth, but Congressman Moulton, whom we cannot get a face-to-face meeting with, we've tried for years to do this and he won't make himself available. His aides, of course, are there, but he wrote a statement in response to us, and I can tell you, and I don't have it in front of me, I'm waiting to get it from their aides. But he wrote a statement that was horrifying to us because he basically said, oh, yes, we all want diplomacy, and I agree with that totally, but it's not going to happen, and we have to win this war. So he used that expression. There's actually thinking that he could win this, and we're thinking at what cost. So it was very disappointing. His response was highly disappointing to us.
You know, I listened to you, and I think it's so wise. I hadn't really thought about we haven't even gotten to the discussion of how peace talks might even look. And you thought it through a bit and mentioned that U.S. At a table with just Russia and the U.S. may not make a lot of sense. I get that now. But, you know, on another thing, too, you don't even hear Ukraine leaders calling for peace, do you?
No, I haven't. And again, I'm hoping something is going on behind the scenes. But no, I am not. In fact, you know, it was very interesting, Bill, when we were down at Moulton's office, a young woman came by and she had a very curious look on her face. And so a couple of us went over to her and say, oh, would you like to join us or would you like to know what we're doing? Turns out she's Ukrainian. And she, when she found out what we were up to, she was upset with us. And we asked her, you mean you wouldn't like a ceasefire in negotiations? And she basically said no, because we don't trust Putin. We think he's a terrible fellow. He's out to destroy us. And our only option is to really not only defend ourselves, but force him out of our country. So it was a very painful discussion with this heartfelt expression from this Ukrainian woman that we were on the wrong track here, and that the only solution was to win this war, and so that was hard for us, and we saw the pain in her face, so that is a perspective, and I think she probably represents what most Ukrainians feel. They've been attacked and they're upset, and they want to, you know, fight this war to the end. But you know, the Russians have too much weaponry. I mean, they're just too powerful. Even though their army, we're told, hasn't performed that well, they've got all these missiles, which every day, as you know, are destroying parts of Ukraine. So, you know, they'll keep fighting until they have nothing left, and we don't want to imagine what that'll look like.
No, I get that, and I understand that woman's point of view. I believe I do. You know what I mean? I get that, and as you do too, I'm sure. But on the other hand, you know, you got to look at another picture, I think, or somehow or other, hope that you know, the people will put the weapons down there. Let me ask you this: what do you think this message of sending tanks to Ukraine will do?
Well, I mean, you know, our rally, you know, the verbiage we used was basically negotiate, don't escalate. Clearly, it represents an escalation. These tanks are powerful weapons. Zelensky's been saying this will make a huge difference for him. And military people that I've listened to are saying the same thing, that these tanks would be a huge asset for Ukraine in fighting this war. But it also represents a significant escalation. And so, it seems to us that this is a commitment to keep fighting and raising the ante, and the Russians aren't going to quit. And so we just see it as a no end in sight here. So it, as much as I understand, this is, again, part of Ukraine trying to defend itself. It just seems like it is for the escalating things. And ultimately, we know Russia has nuclear weapons. At what point would they consider using them? Who knows? But they have them in, you know, the second biggest stockpile in the world, I guess. Maybe even bigger than the United States. I don't know the numbers, but they're roughly equivalent with us. So it's pretty frightening.
Yeah, no, and you mentioned escalation, but let me, you know, and I think when we look at it on a very, like, a linear kind of thing, you're thinking it's Ukraine, Russia escalating. But yet, I'd like your input, because you know the world players. You've already mentioned a few names already. But what does it mean beyond just Russia and Ukraine with escalation? Because it could have bring in other countries as well, obviously.
Well, yeah, there's no question about that. And, you know, one of the huge questions that we all have to look at, and having read the history of this to some degree, I realized that after Andrew Bacevich, by the way, who's a retired military person, taught at Boston University for many years, retired and started a think tank in Washington, D.C. called the Quincy Institute. And by the way, Bill, for anyone who's listening to this, this is a wonderful resource for people who are looking for where's this war going. And they write about all sorts of international affairs, but their focus is on diplomacy and trying to come up with alternatives for war. So they're a really good resource to see where this is all going. But one of the questions, if you read the history, and I would agree with this, actually, I would be critical of NATO. From 1990, you know, when the wall came down, I think there was a sense that, okay, maybe NATO can back off now. Maybe this is a time where we can just kind of, you know, somehow live together with our political differences. But NATO has expanded. In 1999, they added four or five countries. In 2004, four or five more. And so if you're Putin, if you want to put his lens on, you're thinking, wait a second, you know, they keep getting closer to us and they're adding more countries. What's this mean? Are we threatened, you know? Is it a security issue? And, of course, recently these two and this is very sad to me, but these two countries that have been neutral for these years, Sweden and Finland, have finally decided they want into NATO. And that, to me, is an indication, and I think it gets to your question, that they're worried what might happen to them, particularly Finland, which is on Russian border. I mean, the Finns have been neutral all this time, and suddenly they want to join NATO. So they're afraid of what might happen if Russia is successful in Ukraine. So that's troubling, too. And so I think in a lot of these countries, as you know, in Europe, that are part of NATO, are very small countries. I mean, they don't have anywhere near the population that Russia has. And so they evidently are quite concerned about what the future might hold, and once again, it seems that every indication we're getting now is, you know, more tension, more escalation, more people joining NATO, which is just another reason for Putin to go on the offensive, I think. So it almost seems like a deadlock here, and someone has to break through it and say, we have to stop this and work this through. We have to live together with our differences. Mm-hmm.
And not to belabor this, but I believe Ukraine wants in on you on NATO as well, right?
Well, they've gone back and forth on that, Bill. I mean, it's a really interesting question. it appears that they clearly want to get closer to the European Union, and NATO would be a separate decision. I think if you ask Zelensky now, he'd probably say he would want into NATO. But I think if there's going to be a negotiation, it seems to me that would be one piece of the negotiation, that the decision would be that Ukraine would stay neutral and not join NATO. I think that would be a bottom line for Putin. And it's something that the international community would have to look at seriously. But I think you're right. I think right now, I mean, it's NATO countries that are helping him defend himself. So in some ways, you know, in some odd way, he is part of NATO, right? I mean, this is where he's getting his weapons.
No, in essence, you're right. Yeah, absolutely. Hey, I don't want to cut this short on Ukraine, because that's the premise of our discussion here. We can go back to that in a moment. But before we forget, I want you to tell me about the Massachusetts Peace Action Organization. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, the acronym is MAPA. Anyone can access it by just Googling MAPA, Mass Peace Action. Well, they're a wonderful group. It's interesting, you know, I was asked to organize this rally in Salem, and the group put out a statement about the war, all of which I didn't agree with. Much of it I did, some of it I didn't. So I initially said to them I didn't think I could in good conscience organize this rally. So we went back and forth, and they actually agreed to change their statement, including some of my perspective, and it gave me the ability or the freedom or the willingness to do the organizing. But they're a wonderful group of peace activists. They have a staff that, I mean, they are all over the map, Bill, as far as searching for peace. I mean, they have statements. They come out all the time with statements on issues in Latin America, in parts of Eastern Europe, in Africa. And, you know, their focus, again, is just kind of an anti-war focus, that we have to figure out how to settle our differences without resorting to war and violence. So they've been at it for a number of years. They have, you know, great, credible staff people, and they're very committed. In fact, one of their key board members is a high school classmate of mine, and we've kind of renewed a friendship over those years, hoping to bring our insights, you know, to the table. So I'd encourage anyone to investigate who they are and learn from all the information they put out there.
You know, I've really appreciated your perspective on all of this. I got to follow up on, so that statement that they were out with, that you wanted to kind of adjust or amend, if you will, can you share any more about that? What changes you might have been looking for?
Well, I think that, you know, so many of us, we feel that we are citizens of the United States, and so our main role as peace activists is to hold our own government accountable. And I get that totally. I'm in total agreement with that. But I think sometimes in the peace movement, because we have that responsibility and perspective, we're somewhat reluctant to criticize other nations because we think, well, that's up to, you know, the people of Russia to criticize Putin and to hold him to task, or the people of Ukraine to hold Zelensky to hold his feet to the fire. So I think of myself as, yes, a citizen of this country and in some ways a nationalist, but also an internationalist. And so at the same time, and I've spent the last 40 years doing this, criticizing U.S. foreign policy, I also think it's appropriate for us to call other nations to task. You know, we're part of the United Nations, and so there are international agreements and legal documents that hold all nations to account. So I challenge the group to be able to say more things about what Russia is doing, not just criticize our own perspective, whether it be the United Nations or NATO or the United States itself, but also be able to say clearly this invasion was wrong. There are war crimes going on right now, and we need to name those. At the same time, we are begging our government to negotiate and not continue to escalate. So that was part of our differences, and they heard that message and incorporated it into the document more. They got much clearer about their condemnation of the Russian invasion. So that was one thing. Another thing was they are opposed to sending armaments to Ukraine, and as I mentioned to you earlier, that's not my position. Tragically, it's not my position, but I think, you know, they're defending themselves, and they'd be crushed if they weren't getting outside support. They'd just be crushed, and Ukraine would be no more. So that was another difference we had. So we negotiated those things, and I think they finally wrote a statement which I could not embrace 100%, but 85 or 90%, which allowed me to say, the bottom line is we agree that we have to try to end this. So it was a very healthy dialogue, and I respect a lot their willingness to listen to some other points of view.
Fair enough. No, I totally agree. Very interesting back and forth, if you will. And I understand both perspectives, absolutely. And, you know, I don't know which one is right, to be quite honest with you at this point, but I hear what you're saying. Art, anything else that you would like to close with or share with us on this issue or other or something else that I did not ask you about?
Well, you know, I think mostly what I'd like to leave you with, Bill, and for whoever might be accessing this podcast, is so important for us to get informed, all of us, so that, you know, everyone engages in some kind of propaganda, whether it be the Russians or the Ukrainians or the United States. And I think we need to access multiple sources of information and make our own decisions about who we think may be the most close to the truth. So I try to access various sources. I've already mentioned one. If people really want to know something about international affairs, this Quincy Institute in Washington, D.C. is a marvelous resource. You can access them for free. They will send you a weekly newsletter, and they will touch upon, because they have a huge staff of part-time people who are intellectuals and, you know, academicians and journalists and so forth, and they write some very, very thorough analysis about what's going on in the world. So I would just say, encourage people to get informed, to don't make quick judgments, don't just depend upon ABC News or something, and Quincy Institute would be one place to start if you're interested in international affairs.
Fair enough. Sounds good. What we'll do is we'll put a link up to these two organizations you mentioned so people can access. Hopefully we'll be able to put those links up and people will be able to access exactly what you are talking about. Well, Art, thanks so much for your time, your insights, your perspectives, your kind of sharing some real background on Ukraine and Russia and the region, if you will. And so, Art, thanks so much. I really appreciate it. Great being able to get in touch with you and talk with you. And again, thanks for your insights on this podcast.
Great, Bill. Keep up the good work, and hopefully I'll bump into you sometime.
Sounds good. Art McDonald with us here from Salem on MSONewsSports.com.